Welcome to the Optimal Body Podcast. I'm Doc Jen.
And I'm Dr. Dom, and we are doctors of physical therapy, bringing you the body tips and physical therapy pearls of wisdom to help you begin to understand your body, relieve your pains and restrictions, and answer your questions.
Along with expert guests, our goal of the Optimal Body Podcast is really to help you discover what optimal means within your own body. Let's dive in.
Oh, it's so exciting to see people coming into Gen.Health. I cannot even believe that this platform is finally here. We've been working on it for over a year and it's here. And we're giving, yes, you get a free week of really exploring and getting to see the plan, see what we have for you. It's literally day by day set plans based on your needs in your body. So whether it's neck pain, back pain, shoulder pain, knee pain, foot pain, we have it for you. Plus, you can stop scrolling Instagram because we have an explore section. So you literally just go to the tab and you can type in something, or you can just go through our categories that we already have set. And my Instagram videos are all there for you to just be able to explore. You can save things into separate folders. I mean, we're really trying to give you the full access into your body to continue learning and moving, because that's what it's all about. And we're giving 33% off of the year access. So typically it's going to be about $15 a month. However, for the year right now, for a full year, we're giving 33% off of that. So it's only $119, which is the cheapest we've ever created for any program, because we want this to be fully accessible. You have a pain that you're working through. We're going to have different phases. We're going to have 30-day plans, 14-day plans, things to really get you to access your body. And it doesn't take much time. I set up these pain programs in a way that you can only work through them for like 10 to 15 minutes. Just show up, have your video, learn, do the movements, and over time, you're gonna start to feel the difference. We already have such great feedback from some of these plans, and getting to hear what people are saying, it's just so exciting. So please go to gen.health, check it out for yourself, and 33% off. Remember, it's only $119 for a full year of this. We are so honored to welcome back Dr. Molly Parker onto this podcast, because we had her way back in the very beginning in episode 7, where we really went through her story like so much. But we're going to dive in so much deeper in this episode. She's a physical therapist and the owner of Concussion Compass. Her focus and drive for advancing concussion care began in 2011 when she was hit by a cab as a pedestrian. Struggling to find care or explain what she was experiencing, she learned firsthand how big the gaps in concussion treatment are and just the misinformation that is out there. And after years of frustration and setbacks, she decided to create for others the solutions she wished she had for herself. Molly is truly such an incredible human, the kindest person, sweetest heart, continuing to do the work on herself as she continues to help others. And it's so inspiring. So I really hope you listen in, save this information, and share it out to others, because everyone needs to know about what's happening in current concussion care. Molly, thank you so much for being back on the podcast. We were saying how you were episode 7 when we first started, like so crazy, one of our first interviews.
Now we're coming up on 200.
I know. It's so
gosh,
wild.
It's amazing.
But we're just so grateful to have you back. And the reason we wanted to have you back is because your story is so incredibly powerful, and your knowledge as to what you've learned now through this experience and your journey of 9 years, however long it's been, it's something that's just helping so many people. And I don't think enough people are going back to episode 7 to listen to that. So I definitely wanted to have you back to just, you know, share your story and see where you've come in a year now.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, this is the perfect timing, because as luck would have it, March is Brain Injury Awareness Month.
Woo!
So look at that.
It's the perfect time to really highlight brain injuries. And for one of the first times, concussions are going to be featured at the Brain Injury Association conference in Boston at the end of the month. And I'm going to be keynoting and being able to talk about concussions as like a highlight of the brain injury conference. Wow. So it's a really cool time in the concussion world right now.
That's amazing. First of all, congratulations for that.
That's so cool.
Thank you.
Yeah. And I mean, with a little bit of a personal tie into concussion, I'm so glad that even you're saying like this is becoming something that is so much more prevalent, especially in the area of brain injury and how we approach things. But kind of like Jen said, we want a little bit of an update. I mean, if anybody wants to listen back to episode 7, go and check that out. But how have things been in the past year? How has this journey progressed for you dealing with kind of your continued healing and how you have continued to learn about yourself?
Yeah. So I think, you know, for those that don't know me, I had a concussion back in 2011. And I was a pedestrian on the sidewalk. And at the time, I knew nothing about concussions. So I just thought, oh, you know, you get better and how lucky I am. And I ended up developing really severe, what we're now calling the current name, guys, it's changing frequently, is persisting post-concussion symptoms. Mm. So if you hear people talk about post-concussion syndrome or prolonged concussion symptoms, we're all talking about the same thing, but there's a lot of attention being given to how we're naming it. But so for me, I ended up really being one of those horror stories, not getting the proper information, not getting the proper care, not knowing what to do. Really having my life impacted is an understatement, like lost everything kind of a situation. And then last time we touched base, I'd started Concussion Compass, which is the first program of its kind for people living with persisting concussion symptoms. And so over the last year, that's continued to grow. I've started, you know, kind of knocking things out in my own recovery, and am finally in the last few months starting to strengthen again. I've been able to strengthen my body in many years. So it's like,
wow.
IPT's like, ooh, look at that tricep. Like, yes.
That's amazing.
Because it really affected the way, you know, my motor control and my sensation, and I developed a movement disorder. So I've been working a lot on that and coordinating it with my autonomic nervous system again as of late. And then getting a bit of a lesson in making sure I'm setting boundaries and slowing down properly that I don't overdo symptom wise. So that's kind of where I'm at. Compass has now had 1,000 people through the program. And yeah, I'm just kind of like coming off a more of a restorative season and getting back into more of a really connecting with people and putting the program out there and all of the things kind of season.
I mean, that's huge. And just being able to see that, you know, where you need to set up boundaries, especially when you're trying to take off and build a business and help other people and, you know, and you're still recovering yourself. I don't know that people would understand the gravity of what you mean by, you know, your symptoms. Can you describe a little bit of what happened initially when you got the concussion and what led to your symptoms increasingly getting worse?
Yeah. So we will learn this or use this as like a what not to do scenario.
Yeah.
So, and I mean, and this was, you know, a decade ago, so we didn't have the knowledge that we do now. So in the beginning, I was given no education. Now we know education is super important. So what I should have been told is, you know, you take 1 to 2 days off where you're resting. For me, that would have been work. For other people, that might be school. And then we've learned that we want to do a guided gradual return. So we used to treat concussions like, you know, lay in a dark room, rest and do nothing. And what we know now is doing too little activity can actually make things worse. Minus that first 1 to 2 days. First 1 to 2 days is restful. But then for the next, you know, 8 or so after that, we really want to get people up and moving below their symptom threshold. So in my case, I was told nothing. I think I found it in my paperwork after I was in the ER with memory issues. So I don't remember if they actually told me about it.
Wow.
And then I just went right back into work. I had severe symptoms, but I couldn't cognitively process what was happening or what to do or that I should do something different. I just thought they went away. So pushing through severe symptoms early on did not do me any favors. It's kind of like Goldilocks. You don't want to do too little, but you don't want to be pushing through severely. You want to find that level where you can do what you're able to do without increasing your symptom level. So that was probably the big first part where I went wrong. And then after that, I went to doctors and I said something was wrong and nobody knew what to do with me. So what I know now is after about 10 days-ish, if I was still symptomatic, I should have been getting into treatment. But I didn't know that there is specific treatment for concussions based on the type of concussion you're experiencing. And so I had no treatment. I felt miserable every day. I felt like I needed to work to pay my student loans and put a roof over my head. Didn't really understand what was happening. And so I just kept pushing through and kind of trying various things. Nothing was working. And my symptoms over that next probably 6 to 9 months went from bad to completely debilitating. I had, and some common symptoms with concussion too. I had severe headaches, dizziness constantly. I had what's called dysautonomia. And that was anytime I would try to exercise or get my heart rate up, I would get really, really symptomatic or feel like I was going to faint. I developed something called POTS, which is a type of dysautonomia where you can't tolerate postural changes because your autonomic nervous system isn't regulating, your blood flow and your heart rate properly. And then I started to have memory issues. So I couldn't hold 1 + 1 in my head long enough to add 3 to it. And these are all very, very common symptoms of concussions, but everyone just kind of kept shrugging their shoulders and saying there was nothing you can do. And what I know now and what I teach now is there's treatment for all those things. And had I gotten treatment anytime really in that first year or two, but even now, I would have saved years of my life. And so that's why I do what I do now.
Mm, I love that. And thanks for sharing that. And within that, you kind of mentioned that, said something like depending on what type of concussion you had. And I want to hear a little bit more about that, because it sounds like you were dealing with symptoms in a few different areas. I mean, does that have to deal with what type of concussion somebody might have gotten?
Yeah. So I didn't know it at the time, but there's different kinds of concussions. So it's not just a concussion as a concussion. The symptoms tend to fall in 4 categories. So they can be physical, which is like headache, nausea, dizziness. They can be cognitive, which is like memory, attention, emotional. I used to cry for no particular reason. Mm. That was not fun. And then sleeping, either too much or not enough kind of thing. And so what we do now is, we have that 1 to 2 days rest, gradually increasing physical and cognitive activity, low symptom threshold. And then if someone's not really feeling significantly better by about 10 to 14 days, we look and we say, okay, what types of symptoms are you experiencing? Because that's going to tell me what types of concussion, we call them phenotypes. So it's like subtypes you're experiencing. And that is where the magic happens, because we're matching you to the proper treatment. So to give you an example, there's a few different, I shouldn't say schools of thought, a few different systems where people use to break it down to like 5 to 7 different subtypes. But in all of those, you're going to see cognitive symptoms. You're going to see vision, vestibular, some sort of cardiovascular or autonomic type thing. Mood is in there. Vestibular, if I haven't already said that. And then headaches. So depending on what type of symptoms you're experiencing is the type of treatment you need. And so, for example, and cervical, that's the one, which is the neck. Mm-hmm. So if you are someone who's experiencing dizziness and you are getting symptomatic with exercise, that would be vestibular and that would be dysautonomia. And so we'd put you in vestibular therapy and get you on a proper exercise program to treat the dysautonomia. That's what's going to be most impactful for that individual. Someone else might have more cervical and visual difficulties. Vision is really common. So that might be physical therapy for the neck and a vision therapist for vision symptoms. So it's a little more complex than that, and people can have a lot of different subtypes at a time. But that really gives anyone listening an idea of like, oh, if I understand what my symptoms are, those are actually giving me information. And that's going to help me inform like what treatment I need so I can get better faster. And that's the way we really need to start thinking with these injuries, so we get people in the proper treatment as quickly as possible. Because once we get these treated, they really do quite well. If we manage them better acutely, odds go up of a typical trajectory. If we even, you go into persisting symptoms, we manage them properly. Again, we don't expect that to last forever. We expect that to resolve, but we do need treatment for those things. So that's what I scream from the rooftops now.
Well, that's huge.
It's trying to match
Yeah, no, not enough people even know that there's different types of therapies available, right? Mm-hmm. It's like, I know my general practitioner and I know a physical therapist, but I don't know that there's different types of physical therapy. Can you run through just some of the different types of therapies you've done and what it has helped with?
I've done them all. Makes me a really great candidate for what I do now. I like to say that I like to think I went through what I did so that other people wouldn't have to.
Yeah.
So I went through a lot of them that were never really going to help me because they weren't actually targeted at my symptoms. And then I've been through a lot that were really helpful and that help a lot of the people I work with. So I'll touch on some of those. But really, really commonly, concussions tend to require a little bit of a team. So there's not like one profession that owns it and does it all and can like fix everything. I'm using air quotes. But there's common professions that tend to group together to treat these injuries. So one is physical therapy, and seeing someone who actually understands concussions. This is usually postdoctoral training. We're getting it more in schools, but still usually not as sufficient as we need. So someone who has current training, and they can do things like treating your neck. And neck symptoms can mimic concussions, by the way. You can have like dizziness and headaches coming from your neck. They will look at returning you to physical activity. So if you're having any of that dysautonomia symptoms with, you know, exertion type stuff, they can do that. They help with dizziness if they're properly trained in that. And then if it's really their bread and butter, they can do some basic ocular stuff, which means like working with your eyes. So tracking, can your eyes go back and forth? Can they come together when you read? Can they come apart when you look up? Those types of things. So that's a big one. It can be a physical therapist. It can be a chiropractor. Athletic trainers are great in there. And then commonly we'll see people pair with like neurooptometry or behavioral optometry. And that is a special kind of eye doctor where their whole job is function of the eyes. So it's not like the 20/20 vision, let's do a little puff test for glaucoma doctor. It's like they specifically do functional treatment. So they'll work, they have more in-depth understanding of the eyes. If you have like, you know, changes in peripheral field, or if your eyes have shifted up or down or anything like that, they're really great. And then usually I also see either a psychologist in there or, and or someone to do like nutrition and hormones and stuff like that. So maybe a naturopath or an endocrinologist or a functional medicine doctor. I usually tell my people I care less about the title of the profession and more about the person doing the work, as long as they have the educational background. So those are common ones. And then there's, of course, a bunch of other professions involved, but those are like some of the core ones.
I think it's so important, kind of like Jen said, where there's many different types of doctors, there's many different types of PTs, and there's many different types of concussions, where if you injure your ankle, you're not necessarily going to do wrist and shoulder stuff. The brain is the same way. There are many different areas of the brain and our nervous system that can be affected, resulting in some of these symptoms, and therefore we need to have the right professionals to be able to look in and train those a little more succinctly. You had kind of mentioned something about a movement disorder, and that you you started developing this movement disorder, and that you're working a lot on your autonomic nervous system, kind of coinciding with working on that movement disorder. Like, how, first, what is a movement disorder? Why does something like that develop? And how are you currently working on that right now?
Yeah, so movement disorders are not as common, particularly if we get people right away, we can kind of knock that stuff out. But they can be one of the things that occur less frequently in the beginning, or they can kind of develop like mine did. And it was really a combination of things. Movement is so complex. So if we think about all the things involved in it, there's really several different pathways that can be affected that can affect the way we move. And for me, it was like all of them, basically, because it took me so long to get care that the things that were affected were getting worse. And then anything that was kind of hanging in there and helping me compensate after a while, you know, just got overrun. And so I started having all these like secondary issues. So you're like, and a secondary issue would be like, say your hip hurts. And so you're limping and then your knee starts to hurt because you're limping. That's like a secondary issue. So I started developing the movement disorder almost as like a secondary issue. And for me, I couldn't process sensation normally. I'd lost a lot of motor control. My autonomic nervous system, so like my heart rate and my blood pressure and getting blood flow to the proper places, wasn't regulating properly when I was upright. I had a lot of vestibular issues, so I didn't, and proprioceptive issues, so I didn't know where I was in space. And then a lot of visual issues. And, you know, typically information about where we are in space comes in through our vision, processes through all these things, typically meets in the brainstem. So all those things were affected for me. And I still don't fully understand it, being quite honest. But what I do know is that ended up with, I had all these involuntary movements. And when I first met Jen, I think I showed Jen a video, and mm-hmm. it almost looked like I'd had a stroke down the left side of my body, where I had a lot of shaking, my arm curled up and in, my leg curled up. And I finally met a group in LA that specifically treats movement disorders. It's really hard to find someone who knows how to treat those well. But if anyone is struggling, reactive physical therapy in Los Angeles is amazing. They do free international consults, give them a call. They will help set you up with, you know, options in your area. But so started to work with them, went back, worked on some other things. Now I'm back working on kind of the last bit of movement stuff. The sensory stuff is way better for me. The vestibular stuff is way better for me. The vision stuff is way better. It's like this last bit of autonomic and motor control that we're working on now. But like, I'm finally getting a butt again. I'm really excited about it because I just completely atrophied.
I mean, it's so incredible. Like the journey that you have been on through this entire thing. I remember when you would tell me like, I can't walk, you know, down the next street because that's too much for me. Mm-hmm. And I can't be on a screen for too long. Are you still having to monitor, you know, your eyes in terms of how long you're doing screen time and even reading or anything like that?
A lot of like unexpected things put on my plate. So I, you know, knew I was going a little over my capacity, which is usually not a good thing to do when you have symptoms. It's almost like you have a certain amount of gas in the tank a day. And if you go over that, you get less the next day. So if you keep going over your ability, you kind of get less and less and less and less, and less function. So yeah, that was something where like, I wish I would have worked on my boundaries a little bit better, but I did get out of, you know, the situation that was causing that. So I've had a little bit of a regression for the first time in 8 years, mm-hmm. Which has been kind of devastating. So I'm just coming out of that. And so I'm still having to monitor, particularly right now, screen time and fatigue, and having to work a little extra hard on aerobic exercise because all those things were doing significantly better. So in short, yes, but wanted to put it in context because it's one of those things where we should really be able to get those things better and better and better and better. Yeah. But yes.
And I just think that especially is hard. It's almost kind of an idiom to say, I need to slow down, but I'm also starting a business in the same sentence, or mm-hmm. I'm also, you know, continuing to try and grow this new program that I've launched. And so for anyone out there who may be in this type of situation or may have had a concussion, but also carries such a busy, busy life, do you have any places to start on how to start creating those boundaries, on how to start queuing in on the things that you know put you over that edge and start to deplete those gas stores that you're talking about?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, it's really like it's energy management. And so it comes into like, for me, that comes into two categories. One is like my personal, like not people pleasing and working on boundaries and working on all like the personal growth and like mindset stuff. Recognizing that you are worthy and you're not, you know, your worth isn't productivity. You can say no. So there's that kind of side of it. And then there's the more like, what I almost think of like analytical side of it. And that looks like every week it's okay. What do I have in my calendar? Is that sustainable for me? No, probably not. So what do I skip? What do I delete? What do I delegate? And I make those decisions based on getting really, really, really clear with where I want to go, what my goals are, and then what I'm doing in my day that actually pushes me there. Because I, more often than not, I find that you don't really have to do, I probably work a fraction of everyone else. And I find that I can keep pace for the most part, mm-hmm. but it's because I'm not doing all the extra stuff. I'm doing like a few things really well. So I would just say, get really clear on what you value and what you want to prioritize. and what you're really wanting to do, and then make sure that the hours you do have in a day where you're feeling good match that. And there's a bunch of different like techniques and ways to think of energy management and stuff after concussion that we can teach you as well. I have some on my page. We have a great call in the Compass program. But for me personally, and like my life and business, that's kind of what I do.
That's huge. Now, if someone is, you know, in a sport or has a kid in a sport like football or something that's going to be really could result in a lot of concussions, what should be protocol? You know, say someone got in a pretty bad tackle. I'm probably not going to say the words right.
Somebody got into a little tackle situation.
Yeah, but I mean, there could be like severe concussion to doesn't knock you out. Like, is still a protocol that should be followed or that people need to be aware of in these situations, whether it's small to you knocked yourself out?
I love when you talk yes. about football.
Thanks, babe.
Go sports.
The things with the balls, you know.
Yeah. Go for a score.
Oh my gosh, that's funny. In short, yes. I'm actually in a course right now, and I just listened yesterday to a gal that does all the like return to learn stuff for pre-K to like through high school. And so this is like fresh on my mind. So if you are like younger to high school and you are either it's you or your parent, one, injury concussions in kids and adolescents tend to take longer than adults. So just know that the runway is a little bit longer. That's normal. We expect them to get better, but if not, you know, they do have support. With that said, the beginning is a pretty similar as an adult. So it's still that 1 to 2 days, at taking at least one day off school too, just depending how they're feeling. And then they're doing a guided gradual return into physical and cognitive activity. So we usually do the academic stuff first. It doesn't mean they can't like go on walks or anything like that, but we're getting into school first. And what she said, actually, literally yesterday, I was listening to this. She said she was showing us studies. And if you do like strict rest and you're cocooning and you're doing that outdated rest in a dark room that we don't like, you'll take longer to recover. But the reverse is true. If you're just pushing through symptoms, like someone we know was, that's not going to be effective either. And she referred to it as the Goldilocks effect. Like you really want to find that moderate level, and it has to be individual for that student, of where they feel like they can participate as much as they can in the school day without ramping up their symptoms. And there's a lot of different adjustments we can make and ways that we can do that. But we really want to support them in getting back into as much as they can, as soon as they can, without overdoing it kind of thing. So that's usually great to have, you know, the school staff involved, teacher involved, parents communicating and communicating with their healthcare provider. And then we find if we do that, you know, they recover again quite well, usually in, kids, it can take like a couple weeks longer than adults. And that's normal. And then again, for them too, if they're still having symptoms after about, you know, 7, 10, 14 days-ish, then they can start getting into targeted treatments similar to how we talked about previously in this call. I think it's just important to note that we don't want to like isolate these kids or young adults, because that can create more issues. We do want to make sure that teachers really understand that there's individual care that we're, you know, she was kind of saying, you know, the teacher said, well, they're laughing in the hall with their friends, so they must be fine. So we need to have a well understanding of what concussion looks like, and that people look pretty normal, quote unquote, from the outside. So that's what parents need to know. On the field itself, when in doubt, sit them out. If you're not sure that they've sustained a concussion, get them off the field, cool their body temperature down, so take them back into the locker room. You can run through concussion testing there if applicable. But we do know that if they go on the field, even for 15 minutes longer or play the rest of the game, that it can prolong their recovery. So if you suspect a concussion, off the field, cooling down into the locker room, and going from there and determining if it truly was a concussion and kind of, and where to go from there.
No, I think that's great to kind of know that protocol. And Mm-hmm. Even when I was coming up playing the wham bang sports ball games, they didn't have protocol like that. And I know that I had times where I should have stopped playing a game or discontinued to be able to sit out and just continued on, because I kind of, you know, shook the head, found where my team was, and went back and continued playing. And I know that probably didn't benefit me when I got my major concussion later on in life. And it probably did the exact opposite and really affected my recovery from that one. I wanted to ask a question about, you know, a couple different things, and you hear about it a lot in the sports world, but they're mentioning subconcussive blows and how mm-hmm. it can really impact you having multiple and many subconcussive blows. And another thing is, why do some people, and you saw this all the time when I was playing football, why do some people have a hit that looks relatively benign, but mm-hmm. then they will be out and have symptoms for 6 to 8 months? I'm thinking of a few different specific teammates of mine where you look at the mm-hmm. hit and it's like, that wasn't even that bad. And they're out for a long time, and some other people get just smashed and they're back up and they have no symptoms.
Yeah. It's interesting. It's so we used to think that, like, you'd have a concussion, we grade it mild, moderate to severe, which we don't do anymore, because of that reason. Like, you can have people that get something that doesn't seem as bad versus something that seems worse, and it doesn't necessarily correlate to persisting symptoms, mm-hmm. which that's like always kind of blown my mind, because you think it would. But there isn't a strong correlation there, which is why every concussion needs to be taken seriously. So no matter if you think it was, you know, a major incident or, you know, something really light, if a concussion is a concussion is a concussion. And we all bring the brain we have into the injury with us. And so really each one needs to be respected properly. And we're finding that if you actually treat them and you really truly heal from the concussion, then we don't have as much of like these cumulative effects as we do if we keep leaving them like partially resolved. And it's just one of those things where we have the information now, and the research is growing so rapidly that we really should be able to minimize the long-term effects for people from these things. As far as subconcussive hits, I feel like I don't know the research well enough. Mm-hmm. I stay in my persisting concussion symptom zone pretty hard. So I haven't dove into too much of the subconcussive hits or like CTE or anything like that. So I don't think I'll be the best person for that.
And when do people usually see, you know, when is it considered persistent concussive symptoms that are continuing to happen?
There's a little bit of a debate. Mm. In my mind, it's 4 to 6 weeks. You'll hear 4 weeks, you'll hear 3 months. I'll tell you why I'm in the 4 to 6 week camp, because that's when the brain should heal. So when you have a concussion, you have, you know, this acceleration, deacceleration, injury of the brain stretches and shears in the skull. So it's not like that coop contra coop that we used to think. It's you're getting actual like stretching inside the brain. Where we're releasing all these ions that creates, you know, this neurometabolic cascade. And that's physiologically what's happening in a concussion. And your brain recovering from that and reaching homeostasis again takes about 4 to 6 weeks. So after that time period, in theory, you no longer have a concussion. So if you're still experiencing symptoms, you are now experiencing persisting post-concussion symptoms. Mm-hmm. So that's why for me, it's like at the 4 to 6 weeks mark, because physiologically you should be healed from the concussion. That can be a little bit longer in kids, like up to like 8 weeks. But yeah, you'll still hear anywhere from 1 to 3 months.
So now with that, I want to talk a little bit about Concussion Compass. And first off,
my baby.
First off, congrats on over 1,000 people through the program. I bet that's pretty cool to be able to say.
It is. I just changed it on Instagram.
right. Like the most official place where we list our achievements. So what can someone expect if they're to join and start the Concussion Compass program?
Yeah. So my whole thing is I don't want anyone to end up in the situation I did. And as we've talked about here, you really don't have to be suffering with these symptoms for as long as we have people suffering with them. Nor should you be going all around town trying to figure out who actually knows what they're talking about. So one of my ambassadors put it like, Compass is concussion recovery without all the nonsense. He was like a former military guy. He's like, you say it like it is. So we have a couple options for people. The first one is just a concussion 101 mini course. And I think everyone who is experiencing persistent symptoms or has had a concussion within the last 2 weeks and symptoms haven't gone away, should take it. It's an hour. We break it down over 5 days, but you can do it at your own pace. And it walks you through everything that you really need to know. Like the amount of education and how impactful it in there is like a non-negotiable. I wish I could put it like in the middle of the Super Bowl or something like that. Mm-hmm. Because it walks you through what's happening in your brain, why, what the symptoms are. We walk you through understanding your, we give you like your concussion type. So you know who to see, and then we match you to who to see. And then we walk you through how to find that person in your area and everything you can do. So by the end of it, you have like this roadmap to recovery. So that's the first option. That tends to do good for people that are early on or people who are like, I'm just, where do I start? Start there. And then I have the full program, which is best for people probably more 2 months and on, where we walk you through all the foundational parts of concussion that you need to know. So you can either, get the research and get what you need to know quicker and have support while you're seeing other healthcare providers, or if you don't have access to care in your area, there's a lot of things in there that you can do on your own at home to really help relieve some of those symptoms. It's a really amazing place to be. It comes with, you know, live calls so you can ask your questions. We bring in experts from all over the world. We have a really, really lovely community in there so people don't feel so alone while they're going through it. And it's just, if you're experiencing symptoms, it's been longer than 2 months and you're not happy with where you are, it's for you. And it really is designed to have a massive return on investment. And I just can't emphasize enough the importance of your health and the importance of making that a priority. And I hope that we've done a good job of making that process easier for you and feeling more supported. But yeah, that's Compass in a nutshell.
It's an amazing place for people to be able to have that support, because I think like you you went around saying that you had these symptoms and no one could help you. No one directed mm-hmm. you where to go. I'm sure you got turned away from people thinking that it's in your head a lot of times. And that's probably, I would presume, what a lot of people who have these persistent symptoms feel often.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And so it's interesting because in the last year, it's kind of shifted. So I used to see like everybody had not the right information. And now it's like three groups. There's like a group that are like really small, that's like getting into good care right away. They've got a great team and everything's done as it should. And that's amazing. And then I've got a group that still just haven't been told like anything they should have been told. And then once they get the information in Compass, they're like off to the races and they have their team and they're good and they get better and it was great. And then I have this third group where it's like, they're starting to be a lot of coaches and practitioners and things emerge and they just have so much information and they've been to like 80 bajillion people and they're their own case manager and they're struggling financially and someone in their life is being a jerk about it. And they've just like got so much on their plates. And so we really try to help them too and make sure that like, that's what I love about Compass is it's comprehensive. It's what you need to know. It's dialed in. You're not going in a million places. So we really, support that group as well. And I think I lost the train of thought of the question. So let me know if I didn't answer it.
Don't worry. That's such an incredible access place that you're putting together.
Mm-hmm. Would the Concussion Compass help people kind of understand which type of practitioners they should be looking for? I know earlier in our chat, you talked through like all these different types of professionals. And then my second question would be, what if somebody doesn't feel like they have the access to those, all those professionals, or can afford care with all those individuals? Would you have a suggestion for somebody who thinks, financially they might not be able to afford all of the professionals that, they might need?
Yeah. And, it's one of those things where we're getting treatment out there, which is wonderful, but a lot of it's not covered by insurance. Like vision therapy notoriously is not covered by insurance and it's so expensive and almost everyone has vision symptoms. So as far as can we help you understand with what practitioners to see? Yes, absolutely, hands down. We walk you through understanding who to see, why. We have support for how to coordinate with those professionals. We have outcome measures for professionals that might not believe you. Like, we've got you covered 100% there. And we have like doctor locators in there that you can just click, you know, our profession ones that we have and see if there's someone in your area. So that's a definite yes. And then as far as people who feel like it's not accessible, I very vividly remember sitting on my bed in Indian style, surrounded by medical bills, like in a circle around me. And I was like, with my student loans, and I was struggling to work at all. I really shouldn't have been working. And I'll never forget that feeling. I lost everything. Like, when I started Compass, when I got my first paycheck from it, I had $200 left. So it's like, it wiped out my savings. It wiped out everything. So when I created Compass, it was really, really important to me that we rethink how we're accessing healthcare for people, because I don't like this idea that if you're not financially well off, then you can't take care of your health. Yeah. Like, so Compass was created as a way to be accessible for people. So that's why it's a membership. I wanted people to have autonomy. I wanted them to have choice of like how long they wanted to stay. I didn't want them to have to commit to this long period thinking like, oh my God, am I going to be, you know, not well for that long? And it's lower than it should be priced for that reason. So it's built to be accessible. It's $45 a month. It's built to pay for itself. So usually we're saving you visits, a lot of visits. We're saving you a lot of unnecessary visits or shortening the time with getting to the right person, and a million different other kind of avenues. So it tends to pay for itself. But for those people who genuinely just, it's financial insecurity and they don't have it, we do have a scholarship program. And I'm proud to say out of the 1,000, about 10% of those were scholarships, either from, you know, myself or from, we have a lot of sponsors. People just get stoked and they want to help and they know like they can trust us. And so we have a lot of people donate and just say, can you like help someone in need? And we do.
That's amazing. You really just, I'm constantly blown away every time I talk with you, Molly, because knowing what you continue to create and how you're continuing to also address your own needs and take care of yourself along with taking care of so many other people is so inspiring. And you're watching your journey, knowing you for the last few years and seeing where you've come is so incredible. And so we're just so grateful to be able to have you back on the podcast and and this information, just we want it to get out there. And, you know, it's so incredibly necessary.
I so appreciate people like the two of you, the two of you who are getting this information out there. Like, I just can't, like, the impact of that or the messages I get of like, oh, I listened to you on the Optimal Body podcast and I was crying in the car with my husband and we figured out that this, you know, like, it's just getting this information out there is so powerful. So I'm always really grateful to how supportive y'all are and just appreciate you both.
Same.
And of course, we'll have everything linked up down in the show notes. So if you are listening and interested in anything, go check that out.
Go check Molly
on Instagram. She's got lots of great stuff. And I'm sure this is just the second of many times that we'll have you back.
Yeah. And congrats on the podcast.
Thank you.
We're crushing it.
Doing something with it.
Another incredible interview with Dr. Molly Parker. Thanks so much for tuning in. And just remember, right now we're running an exclusive deal on our Gen Health platform. So go check it out, get in on that deal and start some of our plans to help you address your restrictions, your specific needs in your body. We have a search bar. You can search all of Jen's most common and most popular Instagram tips, as well as other workouts, mobility flows, core stability workouts. Everything. Go check that out. It can be the one in all tool for your body and continued growth in your movement. And of course, we will see you next time on the Optimal Body Podcast.